Mr. Lewenden, Reel 14. Right, Mr. Lewenden, it's December 1943 that we've got to talk. Apparently, some of your senior NCOs were too old to go abroad, and there were others that didn't go abroad as well. Can you remember much about that?
Of course, you see, the Rye was the last stop, as you might say, before we went abroad. And it was when we were in Rye that they were concentrating on the battalion going abroad, and because of, as you say, some of the NCOs were a bit getting on a bit, and they were doing the war establishment, but that was for the sake of records, you see. And I suppose that one or two of the NCOs did sort of speak up about it, and some of them were a bit long in the tooth. And like I say, this bloke Reeves, he was one of them. He was pioneer between. He never went. So what they tried to do was to sort those older ones out and repost them somewhere, and then they, in the meantime, they trained up other people in the platoons who were ready and waiting to more or less to take over, and so there was no problem, not really, to replace them in the platoons, because they did have people trained ready and waiting to take the job over, you see. So therefore they were able to get the older ones posted away or to wherever they wanted to go or whatever it was.
God, how many do you think?
Well, I don't really know, because that's the sort of thing that was conducted between, like, the company commander and the adjutant and the orderly room. And it's quite likely that when that was happening, the people like Dougie Wakefield and Ken Cove and them in the orderly room, they would have known about it. But then, you see, they would be the first to know anyway.
So the orderly room was where all the information about the battalion went through.
That's right.
Did that mean there was a lot of gossip between soldiers?
Well, not so much gossip, but no, I don't mean that. Because in the orderly room, they used to do all the clerical work for the whole battalion, you see, and brigade, and they only had, at that stage, Rye, I'm talking about, they had knights, he was the orderly room quartermaster sergeant, knights, Ken Cave, he was a sergeant, Dougie Wakefield, and a bloke called Ian Neal, and they were the orderly room staff, and then they were in contact all the time with the adjutant, all the time.
So what was your relationship with them as company?
Well, my relationship with them was between headquarters company and the orderly room. The orderly room would send out messages for this, that and the other, and you'd have to deal with them, and the chances were that you wouldn't get straight back to the adjutant, you'd get back to, like, Tony Wakefield or Ken Cave or somebody.
So,
and they would deal with it.
So, above headquarters company was Battalion HQ, is that how it would work then, in terms of the structure of the battalion?
You mean?
Because the people talk about battalion headquarters.
That was the important part. The battalion headquarters was the hub of it.
And the orderly room was part of that.
Oh, yeah.
And so headquarters company was below that.
Yeah.
So some of the other veterans have talked about NCOs pulling strings the other way, men that were too old that wanted to go abroad.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know about
that. Not in your experience?
No. I can't honestly say that I knew all the NCOs and released, and I can't honestly say that any of them ever said anything like that to me. And I knew them all in a matter-of-fact sort of way. I could talk to them like I'm talking to you.
So you're on the ship at around about Christmas time. Were there any examples of men that never made it that went absent without leave? Or?
No. Yes. Well, there was one, but that happened in Rye. Actually, there was only one that I knew of that happened in Rye, and that involved. He's in one of those photographs you've got there. That involved the signal sergeant, Tommy Baker. And he went absent at Rye. He went absent for the very reason that you've just been talking about the ones who, some of them who didn't want to go abroad, and some of them who did. And he was one of the ones who didn't. And to that extent, he went absent in Rye. And before we left Rye, and went to Cambly, Tommy Baker had been absent for 21 days, which made him a deserter, and he was automatically then struck off the battalion strength. In the meantime, somebody else had been, if I remember rightly, it was Sergeant Thompson, Jimmy Thompson, came down, I think it was Jimmy Thompson, or was it Billington, was taken his place in the signal two as signal sergeant, and Captain Garden was still the signals officer. Tommy Baker, as I say, was a deserter, so he stuck off the strength straight away, and of course. He was caught, as soon as we left Rye and we went to Camberley, the police knew where Tommy Baker was. It's a strange thing.
Where was he?
He was in the house halfway down the street from where I was billeted in Rye, in Mermaid Street, that's where he was.
Did you know about this all the time?
No, I didn't. I didn't know. I can't honestly say that I knew for sure. All I knew was that there was a sergeant, and he was living. Well, I was told. This is what I was told. I was told that he was living in the house in Mermaid Street, and whoever it was, a little boy that told me this. He was about 10, 11 years old, and he told me this, and of course I was then in our company, and I was billeted in Mermaid Street, and I didn't know who was living where, but I knew that there were some more in the houses down the road, and this little boy told me that he kept calling him Sergeant Tommy, and he said he's got two flags on his arm, and I thought I wondered what he was talking about, and then it was I fell in, you see, down here with a signal. So of course that was my suspicions were then aroused, and I never said anything right away, but although what I would like to have done would have been to ask this little boy, and I don't know what his name was, but I would have asked him a little bit more, but I never got the opportunity to do that. Perhaps in a way it was just as well I didn't, but anyway, I kept it in my mind, and strangely enough, as soon as Tommy Baker had gone absent, it was me who first reported him absent, because of how I had to put the necessary report in from headquarters county office. So it's ironical, really, that this little boy should come to me and tell me that. And so I never worried about it a lot, but I thought, well, I've got a feeling that somebody ought to know. So I took, I managed to have a quiet word with Sergeant Major Glover, who was at CSM, the bar company, and I told him what I thought was happened. And he listened to me, and he said, well, what do you want me to say? He said, what are you asking me? So I said, do you not think that we ought to, or somebody ought to say something? So he said, no. He said, I don't think you ought to say anything at all. And he said, don't say anything to anyone. He said, have you told anyone else? So I said, no, I haven't. He said, you're quite sure? He said, I said, yeah. He said, well, don't tell anyone else. And he said, that's it, forget it. He said, you needn't worry. He said, he'll be picked up. He said, you know that we're on the move from there. He said, as soon as we're gone, he'll be picked up.
And who was supporting Sergeant Baker then? I mean, how was he managing to live in this house? I mean, who was feeding him?
Well, I can only assume that it was this little boy's mother. But I don't know her name. And I don't know the little boy's name either. All I know is he was about, I should say, between 10, 11, 12, no more than that.
So it was that kind of, that tie that was wanted that kept him in England, really, that wanted it, that why he
wanted
to
stay. Well, that was Tommy Baker's tie. And Tommy Baker was married, and so far as I know, I think I've told you before, if you either lived in, it was either Colchester or Clacton, one of those two. I'm pretty sure that, I think it was Colchester. I'm pretty sure it was Colchester, but I wouldn't be absolutely certain.
And so was he picked up after you left?
Yeah, picked up straight away.
And what happened to him?
Court martial, and he got 96 days field punishment, and he served his time at Sowerby Bridge in Yorkshire. Of course, in the meantime, we were away, and his court martial happened when we were on the high seas, I should imagine. But
and did he eventually join you?
Oh,
there?
He came back. We served his time. And he rejoined the battalion. I can't tell you the name of the place because, it was in Italy. I can tell you that.
So
he came as a reinforcement. See.
So CSM Glover was quite sympathetic to him, and he didn't.
Well, yeah, I wasn't sympathetic.
So he was the only one that sprang to mind at this period.
Yeah, he was. He was the only one that I knew. If there had been any more, I would have known about it.
So people felt confident, maybe that's not the right word, but they realised that people would be picked up if they went absent without leave. That they felt that the authorities would track people down.
Well, yes, because you see, in a case like that, like in that particular case, after the 21 days, the military police are not necessarily involved in picking up that character, whoever he is. It could be the civilian police. What I'm saying is that they work together on a thing like that. Whatever one of them knows and the other one doesn't, they make sure that everybody's concerned does know, you know. They don't have any secrets between each other. Right?
We were talking a little bit earlier about when the ship was underway, and one of the NCOs, Jimmy James, won a lot of money at cards. We could just continue with that. That's the story that you told us off the tail as well.
Oh, yeah, that was on the cruise ship, wasn't it?
Well, what was the story to that?
Oh, yeah, well, we'd got on the cruise ship, and actually we were steaming away down the Mersey. You know, I suppose we were going to join the convoy, you see. And we were going, there was another couple boats besides us, and we were going down the Mersey. But there were a lot of them were, they purposely stayed up on the deck so that they could just sort of have a last look at Liverpool on the way out, as you might say. And that was the only reason that they were up there. They weren't up there for any other reason. They were just sort of having a last look, and there was, you know, if anybody had any thoughts about jumping overboard or anything like that, that would have been the time to do it, as you might say, because, it didn't happen, but I mean, if anybody had done that, that would have been the best time to do it, because at least you weren't on the high seas or anything like that, you know. And
so people, in a way, were half hoping or expecting somebody.
Well, I suppose there was always that. I suppose you could say it's always a possibility, but I dare say that somewhere or other maybe it did happen, but
it didn't happen on your ship.
I don't know. You know, the only thing about that I noticed, not because I noticed it, but I wasn't the only one who noticed it, because a lot of them noticed it. There were a lot of people on there. You see, you got in the troop ship, you got, you know, it goes in layers, you see. It's not just one deck, you know. And the thing is that there were quite a lot up there, and there was a bit of movement sort of at the stern of the ship, like, looking back, Liverpool's over there, and the Mersey ran off down there. And there were a lot of people right at the stern of the ship, and if that was going to happen, that would have been, an ideal time to do it, as you might say. But I did notice that there was a lot of movement right at the back, right in the stern of the ship. And it's so much so that they began to get worried about it. Somebody got worried about it, because the next thing I knew, the sergeant major was sent up. Obviously, somebody said something somewhere, and Sergeant Major Edrington came up onto the deck, and he wanted to find out what all the movement was, and all he could find out was that they were taking a last look before they sailed out of the Mersey. That was put down as that.
So there's that many men on that part of the ship?
There's that many, you know, in that, and they were pushing and shoving, and so anyway, he was sent out there to disperse them, you see, which he did do. He told them that he got rid of them, and he told them all to go down onto their decks, wherever they belonged. And he sort of said, "Do you want to have a game of cards or something?" That's what he said. And I don't know where he went to then, but he'd done his bit. He got rid of the crowd. So that was the only movement that I saw, but it didn't really mean anything. Nobody did anything, dramatic.
I think you said off the tip that there was a rumour that there was a fellow in C Company that wasn't going to...
Well, there was, yeah, that there was. You see, you often heard on a run, I shouldn't say often, but you did hear, sometimes, but it depends, like the likes of me, I used to hear sometimes snatches of conversation between different people. And sometimes you used to get a feeling that you'd hear somebody talking who would possibly do something like that. And the only other one I knew, or I didn't actually know him, but I knew of him, was a chap who was in, he was in C Company. He was, as a matter of fact, he was a cook in C Company. And his name was Essen. It was fairly common knowledge. I only got it as a sort of a, well, it was a bit stronger than the rumour at one time, but I got it as a rumour really. And it was fairly common knowledge that that was the way he felt about it. He, you know. But when we had this movement at the back of the stern of this troop ship on that particular deck, on that particular night, or should I say that particular morning, I started to think about Billy Essen. But of course that was completely wrong, because it just did cross my mind, you know, because that is the sort of thing.
So you put two and two together.
Yeah.
Well, why do you think he didn't want to go abroad? Was it just a
no idea? I don't know. I only got it. You see, the thing was, Billy Essen was a cook in C Company, and C Company were in Winchelsea, and I was very seldom in with Winchelsea myself, although I knew various people up there. You know, who were stationed up there. I knew quite a lot of people who were stationed up there, but in C&D Company. But I never used to go there very often myself.
So would these be people that you'd become friends with from your time in Scotland?
Oh yeah, I knew them well. I'm people like Peter Griffin and Noel Amissi and Dick Walker and Charlie Bray, you know, Broadhead, you see.
And so these were friends, but they were, yeah. you were away,
yeah,
from them.
Sometimes, I mean, I think Peter Griffin's passed on now, but I feel sure that it's more than likely that there could possibly have been Peter Griffin who told me what he thought about Billy Essen and what Billy Essen's feelings were.
And that was because Peter Griffin was
out. Well, yeah, he was in contact with him, you see, and I wouldn't have been. And I knew I could have gone to C Company and picked out Billy Essen, but only because he was one of the original cooks under Sergeant Battle, who were then, of course, all the cooks at that time they'd been transferred out of the DLI and put into the Army Catering Corps. Like Sergeant Battle was. They all came under Sergeant Battle, you see.
So the odd cases of men being reluctant to go abroad. Mm. What was morale like generally? I mean, you're sailing on Christmas Day.
I wouldn't say it was too bad. Nobody seemed to... the people I talked to, they never seemed to... Well, they just accepted it, I think, in your mind. That's all you can say, really.
So CSM Etherington organised this game of cards, and apparently Jimmy James had a big win. Did the memory of that, did the knowledge of that spread around the ship, or did he keep it quiet at the time?
Oh, no, everybody. Well, I say everybody. I mean, there were a lot of people on that through the ship, and only on that deck. The only people who would probably know about it would have been the people who were on that deck where the game of cards took place.
So what was the story about what he won? How much money did he win? What was the story that people said about how much money? Because apparently he won a considerable amount.
Oh, yeah, he did, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but ironically enough, that money, in the end, that money went to charity. And I don't know if you know that, but it did. Jimmy James told me that himself.
What do the other sergeants feel about?
I didn't care. It was a laugh, you know.
So they had a bit of
light-hearted thing. It wasn't as though Edmondson sort of made that suggestion about the cards. It wasn't as though he sort of said, "Well, go downstairs and play cards with Jimmy James, and he'll win some money off you." You know, he just wanted to get rid of the crowd. That was all he said that for.
Did he have? It was Christmas Day. Did the authorities make any special arrangements to celebrate Christmas?
No. I can't remember. I think quite possibly nothing outside of the. Well, it was only the food thing. But then again, you know, it was that particular time, or should I say, it was early hours of the morning, really. So, no, I don't think there was really. If there was anything, it would have been in the food line.
And what was the food?
Only what they were eating on the troop, you know.
So they didn't make it. They didn't have a Christmas dinner.
No, there was too many of them. There was far too many. So.
Were you seasick?
I was a little bit. A lot of them were, but everybody was issued with the old brown bag when I first went on the boat, and that was what you had them for, you know, to carry around with you in case you felt like that. I think we had a bad. What would we be? We come out of the Mersey, and I suppose we go into the. Which is Greenough now as the RFC. It was a bit rough when we first got hit the high seas. And I think a lot of people were seasick then, quite a lot of them. But, you know, nobody took too much notice.
You just accepted it?
Well, it's just one of those things, wasn't it? I mean, they knew they probably might have begun to be.
So what was your routine on the ship? Your routine?
The one set routine, of course, was the boat drill, which you had every day. So, in actual fact, if I remember it, they did one. It was a sort of a dummy run, really, to see. Everybody was put in the pits and told what to do, where to go, who would be in charge of that boat, whatever. You know, they were told everything. And I think they did a sort of a dummy run. If I can remember, I think they did do a dummy run. Would have been before we actually got out of the Mersey, when we were probably still in, just about in the Mersey. But I think they only did that just to let everybody know that and see how they reacted to what they've been told. You see. Well, it wasn't difficult. I mean, you had your station and it was quite reasonably near, you know, you could get to it quite easily from your mess deck. And so all you needed to know was where to go.
So how did you fill in your day on the troop ship?
Nothing really. It was just cards or whatever.
There was no training exercises?
No, nothing like that.
What about PT? Was any of that?
Well, there were various units did do that. I can't remember that it was done. I don't think it was done, as far as we were concerned, I don't think it was done any of our people organise anything like that. Mm.